two guests to you this hour and for the rest of the program as well. And this is just an incredible series of work that these two individuals have done. John Bindernagel is a graduate of the Wildlife Management option at the University of Guelph in Canada with a master's degree, PhD from University of Wisconsin as well. He is a professional wildlife biologist with international experience with the United Nations in wildlife conservation, research, training in East Africa, Iran, Nepal, and the Caribbean, as well as Central America. His field research has included wildlife surveys of bald eagles, seabirds, moose, bears, and other North American mammals. He's presently carrying out field work on Sasquatch or Bigfoot. Dr. John Bindernagel. John, how are you? Welcome to the show.
Good. I'm fine, thanks, George. How are you?
Good to have you with us. Very well. Thanks. Dr. Jeffrey Meldrum is an associate professor of anatomy and anthropology at Idaho State University. He is also an affiliate curator at the Idaho Museum of Natural History and affiliate curator of the Bigfoot Field Researchers Organization. Dr. Meldrum has been investigating the ways monkeys, apes, and human ancestors get around or move for nearly 15 years. Some of his research has focused on the way in which the human foot has adapted to the habit of walking on 2 feet. His research compares and contrasts the anatomy and function of diverse primate feet. He has written a fascinating book called Sasquatch: Legend Meets Science. Dr. Jeffrey Meldrum. Hello, Jeffrey. How are you?
Just fine, thank you. Glad to be
good,
with you.
Good. The book, Sasquatch, is it out yet?
It is. It was released on the 19th, this past Tuesday.
Excellent.
So it's on store bookshelves and various online distributors now.
Tell me a little bit, if you can, Jeffrey, and you, John, of your personal interest in the search for Sasquatch. Oh, we'll go with you first, John.
Sorry, is that for me?
Yeah.
John or Jeff?
John.
Oh, sorry. Yes. Well, I'm a wildlife biologist, as you mentioned, and this actually came up when I was an undergraduate way back in 1963 when I raised it in class at university and was essentially laughed at. You know, when I mentioned this was actually the Roe report of 1955 when a man in northern British Columbia reported a Sasquatch. It was written up in, I think it was Argosy magazine. Well, you know, one doesn't like to be laughed at, and I thought, you know, I was pretty young and idealistic and thought we should be at least discussing this, but we weren't going to discuss it. That was not allowed. And that was my introduction to the whole idea that this is kind of a taboo subject amongst, wildlife biologists and other zoologists. And that was the start right there.
How about you, Jeffrey?
Well, I grew up in the Pacific Northwest and, obviously was exposed to some of the stories and events surrounding the early history of Bigfoot, as it was known in the United States, but it wasn't until just a little over 10 years ago that it was sort of thrust upon me when I was confronted with a set of fresh footprints that were really otherwise inexplicable. And one thing led to another, and given my research interests in hominid evolution, and particularly the evolution of the locomotor system, an examination, evaluation of these unusual footprints was, you could say, right up my alley. And one thing has just led to another.
Jeffrey, tell me why the investigation and the research into, you know, the feet of the primate is so important. This is fascinating.
Well, obviously, we point to the habit of standing on two legs, of walking bipedally, as a uniquely human adaptation, the business end of that behavior takes place at the feet. The feet are the part of the anatomy that most intimately interacts with the substrate that we're moving over, the ground, the soil, whatever the terrain might present. And so from that vantage point alone, the prospect of another large primate exhibiting a similar adaptation is really a fascinating natural experiment for an anthropologist such as myself to take a closer look at, because we could learn so much if we could study another species, as I believe, that has independently evolved this behavior under different similar circumstances, but in different biogeographical setting from the African hominids that are our ancestors, that comparison and contrast could really be enlightening in regarding the evolution of our own behavior and anatomy.
John, what is your reaction to the many reports we get of Bigfoot or Sasquatch sightings in the United States?
Well, my reaction is that here we have a large mammal that is, seen just like bears are seen, deer are seen, elk are seen, and which in fact is seen relatively commonly because, as we both know, most sightings do not become reports. So by, for every report that we receive, we know there could be a dozen, maybe 100 sightings that are not reported. So I've come to the conclusion that this animal, yes, it's rare, it's uncommon, but not as rare as we think, that there are more than we think, and that they're seen more commonly than we think.
Why haven't we obtained one? Why haven't we really been able to get, let's say, bones? They've got to die. Why can't we get bones of these creatures?
If that's for me. Well, I mean, obviously, we'd have a different type of conversation if we did have that. And this is, in fact, what I've been working on these last couple of years. Why the resistance? Granted, okay, I guess my question is, in the absence of a carcass, can we not proceed? I think we have enough to proceed. We have very detailed eyewitness descriptions, rich, full descriptions going back, over 150 years. And now, and this is where Jeff's huge contribution is, he has an archived collection of plaster casts and these tracks, and he'll talk about more than I will, but I think this is so important because there's the corroboration. The tracks corroborate the existence of the Sasquatch. So I guess my point is that we really don't need a carcass. It would simply be more corroboration.
I would add to that, too, that type of a question or that concern and that when it's used as an objection to proceeding, why don't we have a body? Why isn't there a bone? Why aren't there fossils? Just simply reflects a bit of naivete about the natural history that is presumed for this species and the environment in which it reportedly lives. An animal that, if this indeed is a large ape, as I think both John and I tend to advocate, then we can extrapolate from their natural history a long life expectancy, a slow development to maturity, infrequent reproduction. And when you combine that, which equals essentially a death being an extremely rare event amongst a very rare and widely dispersed species, you combine that with the habitat in which they live, which notoriously produces very acidic soils that very quickly decompose and do away with any bone remains, then it's not really surprising that we don't have a bone or a body. People are always amazed when I point out to them that we have virtually no fossil record, no direct fossil record of the ancestors of chimpanzees or gorillas. And it was quite a stunning revelation when just very recently, I think it was last year, the date escapes me now, when finally in Africa, not outside of Africa, but in Africa finally, four single isolated teeth were attributed directly to a chimpanzee ancestor. Now that species has presumably been a resident of the African continent for at least 7 million years. And yet for that 7 million years of residency, we have four teeth to show for it.